This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. How would you depict compassion on a blank canvas? Thousands of students and artists in La Crosse contemplated that question this year. With the La Crosse Compassion Project, students painted, sketched, and created collages that expressed their thoughts on compassion on a 6x6 canvas. Now, those 6,000 works of art are on display at the Pump House here in La Crosse. Here today to reflect on and talk about the Compassion Project are Bethany Nugent. She's an art teacher at Hamilton Soda 1 and Lincoln Soda 2. And Steve Michaels. He's the supervisor of fine arts for the La Crosse School District and principal of Hamilton Soda 1. So this year, 6,000 students participated in the La Crosse Compassion Project. And I may be wondering, Steve, if you can just first remind people why exactly the La Crosse School District got involved in this project this year.
One of our friends in our school district, his name is Tim Riley. He's the director of the La Crosse Public Education Foundation. Tim brought the project to my attention. He said, I want to tell you about this project we did in Appleton. And I want to tell you about this project and how it got our community talking about this theme of compassion and how it brought some attention to some of our really hardest working teachers in our school district, our art teachers, and how as a district we worked together, K-12, to pull off a really amazing display, but more importantly, led a dialogue in the community. So I was hooked. I listened right away, and I thought there's a way that this can happen. I think that La Crosse is the perfect community for it. We've got a terrific staff. And from there, it was really a matter of presenting the staff, presenting that project to the staff and getting them a chance to question and think about it and how can we bring our own spin to this project and how do we make it our own and not just take the exact same thing that happened in another town, make it practical here.
And Bethany, when you first heard about this, obviously as an art teacher, I mean, it's a fascinating project, but what was going through your head?
I thought it was just a thrilling project from the very start of it. For me, it was a lot about bringing arts out into the forefront of our community. A lot of times we get a lot of appreciation for the music in our district and things like that that are very important and are very integrated into our curriculum. But it's also, I think, important to have something this big for our students who are really interested in art and to bring art kind of to the forefront for our community. I also thought it was really important for our students to have a chance to take this big idea that is kind of a difficult thing to define and really break it down and have 6,000 different variations on what that could mean for the students. And I think for my kids as young as kindergarten, it was a really big challenge, but also something that was really rewarding for them. Once they got the idea of what is compassion and put that idea onto canvas, now the kids are so excited about having their art at the Pump House and about being a part of something that's a little bit bigger than what they normally do in a regular art class.
But this is really something that, I mean, as you said, is really permeating throughout the community and is really drawing the entire community into it, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's been really awesome to see how many people have come on board. I think neither Steve or Tim or I ever would have imagined how many people would jump on board with this project.
That's kind of the beauty of the whole thing is, on one level, it's a student art project. And that's good in and of itself. And kind of that's kind of the role that I was taking with this was making sure that that happened first. But beyond that, as more and more people started hearing about this, we didn't necessarily promote it with lots of advertising and a lot of meetings, but we had a lot of people come to us and say, tell me more about this. I'm hearing this from my kids. I'm hearing about this through our guidance counselor. We're hearing about this. Tell me more and tell me what I can do to be a part of it. So I'd say organic is definitely the way that this spread. It was one of the things that kind of caught on in various pockets. And there are institutions, of course, that devote themselves to the ideals of compassion. Those are the likely players that came to the forefront right away. But there have been other businesses, too, who have really seen a need for this in our community.
In looking at the beginnings of this project, too, a lot of it stems from the research of UW-Madison professor Dr. Richard Davidson, who essentially found that those who practice compassion have measurably higher healthy brains and a happier outlook on life. Just that research in particular, I mean, Steve, was that anything that you had ever really given much thought to before taking this on?
Definitely not. But I need to tell you, it was a wonderful trip. We took a trip down to the Wiseman Center at the University of Wisconsin campus. We met Dr. Davidson down there and his team, and in this time of an education, there's a lot of accountability, there's a lot of assessment, and no one's balking at any of this. It all makes sense. But to put it in perspective and hear another twist on a way that we could be teaching and learning and nurturing this notion of compassion within our schools through practicing mindfulness, among other things, then the research that they have is irrefutable. It's not just a slight increase in student achievement. It's dramatic. And sometimes a better predictor of happiness when a child is, or when a person reaches the mid-30s than our ACTs, SATs, and other scores. So I thought it was fascinating research, and it's really something that our district, the founding fathers in our district, some of them who created our core values, clearly saw as well. So there's a lot of things just connected through this project.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about the La Crosse Compassion Project. My guests are Steve Michaels. He's the supervisor of fine arts for the La Crosse School District and principal of Hamilton Soto 1. And Bethany Nugent. She's an art teacher in the La Crosse School District. So, Bethany, let's talk about how you did incorporate this into the art room throughout the year. You know, on day one of teaching the different students that you work with about the Compassion Project, what did you tell them and what exactly, how did you embrace this in the classroom?
I actually started this out as a conversation on compassion itself, not about the Compassion Project, not about what these kids were going to be doing. But I think it's a really important thing to bring at the beginning of the year anyway. It's a good reminder for our kids as to how we should treat each other, how we should act at school and outside of school. And so I actually was able to incorporate my guidance counselor at Hamilton Soto 1, which is Stephanie Mancuso, and at the middle school level, Rick Blazing. And both of them were a wonderful part of the conversation that I had in my classroom with our students. They came at this from a guidance standpoint, which is part of their curriculum anyway. It's something they would teach no matter what to our students. And so it worked out perfectly that these two were able to come into my classroom and really add to that conversation. And our kids got such a rich experience by having more than just one person talk to them. It wasn't just, this is an art project. It was, this is a school project. This is a district project. And I think that the kids really bought in then from the very beginning with this project. After that, we went into sketching and kind of planning things out, and then the kids moved on to their canvases and started creating the wonderful works that we have now.
Is thinking about an art project as more of a school project versus an individual assignment, does that really change the way that the students look at and maybe tackle a different project?
I think it makes the kids think about it as something that's really important. As I think the kids really enjoy their art no matter what, and I think that they have fun creating it, which is one of our big goals, is that the kids enjoy art making and get to explore different things. But I think when the kids know that it's something that's going to be district-wide, that they really get excited about it, and they really take their time, even at the kindergarten, first grade level, where we don't typically see kids spending a lot of time on their art. We see them kind of take a little bit more time, take a step back, and really look at it. And we had some really meaningful conversations as well, where the kids kind of got to give each other feedback and say, you know, oh, I like how this shows compassion, or I would do this to show compassion. And I really think that the kids bought into the project and created some really wonderful pieces.
So you talked about how the students would sort of sketch out and maybe plan how they were going to depict compassion. But when the day came that they were going to either paint or draw or glue different elements onto a 6-inch by 6-inch canvas, what was that like? I'm wondering if you can talk about what was going on and maybe just the different feelings in the classroom.
Sure. It's a little bit of kind of craziness around the classroom. For this project, depending on the age level, I varied the material use that the kids had. So obviously a little bit more limited materials with the kindergartners and first graders. Getting to my 4th and 5th graders and 6th and 7th graders, letting them use virtually whatever they wanted to create the project. And so the classroom was a little bit chaotic, but in a really good way, in that we could go around and talk to the kids about what they were doing. And the kids were communicating with each other about, yeah, I'm going to use paint because I think it shows compassion in this way, or I'm going to use these markers because I think it's going to show the idea that I really like for this project. And so I think it was really cool to see the kids kind of communicate with each other and go back and forth and not have it be a project where necessarily I said, you have to use this material. The kids got to kind of pick what they thought was going to depict it the best. And I think that really is what creates the independence and the individualized projects that you see at the Pump House. When you go and look there, it's really each individual canvas has a story. And when you go, it's overwhelming when you walk in the door. You have 6,000 stories staring back at you.
And Steve, did you ever pop into the classroom on the days that the students were working on the Compassion Project?
Yeah. Lots of time. And, you know, Bethany also piloted a project, you know, the previous spring just to, for colleagues to say this can be done. Here are some examples. Here are some products we can try. And in each situation, on one hand, some of our art staff initially was concerned about it being restrictive. You know, here is the 6x6-inch panel. I need to fit this mold. But on the other hand, just as Bethany has suggested here, and people have learned that, depending on what's developmentally appropriate for these children, the sky is the limit based on what you can do with this panel, with the resources you can use, the media you can use within that. So I thought it was really interesting to see the different levels. You know, I'm very fortunate to be at an elementary school where we have a lot of concrete thinkers and then students starting to understand abstract thought as well. And that was pretty neat to see. It was pretty evident in their planning. It was evident in their part of the discussions that happened with the guidance counselors. It was very clear as to who were the concrete thinkers and who was beginning abstract thought. And it was really neat to see how they took those ideas and portrayed them through art.
And Bethany, yeah, you're working with all different age levels. Do the students who are in kindergarten versus eighth grade have different understandings of compassion? I mean, I guess it would just be different levels of the way that they interpret it themselves.
Yeah, right? I think that they take it kind of to different levels. For our more concrete thinkers, it's a lot about the, you know, like I said, my helping my friend on the playground or helping with their homework or I drop something in the hallway. As you get older, you get a lot more of the symbolism, which is something that I worked with my middle schoolers on a lot, is taking it beyond drawing a heart, taking it beyond a peace sign, and really finding out what compassion truly means. My one example I always use with them is that every time I see compassion, there's not a magic smiley face that shows up. I see something else. I see someone, you know, holding someone's hand or giving someone a hug or helping someone with something. And we also talked about how compassion can be represented on a global level, and it doesn't have to be just me to you. It can be me to this animal or me to the earth or to a different country. And so I think that it's really important for the kids as they get older to really understand their role as a global citizen and that we play a part in everything that happens in our community, but also around the world. We know in education that kids don't fit a mold. They grow and progress at different paces. And so we had, you know, there might be a class where you have one person that is a fifth grader that's acting more like a seventh grader in the way they're depicting compassion. And you might have a situation where they're acting like a fifth grader. So it's, you get a wide variety. And I think that that's a really good thing. And I think that it brought a lot to our classrooms too, because when we have these conversations, you can have that person who maybe has a deeper understanding of compassion, maybe they've had a personal experience with it or something, and they can have a communication or a conversation with other students in the classroom, in the school, and they can go and talk to a kindergartner and say, this is what I'm doing for the Compassion Project, or they can go to a 12th grader and say, this is what I did. And so the kids really had this opportunity to communicate K through 12 with each other. And I think that that's important. There's not a lot of times where our curriculum lines up K to 12 doing the same thing.
No,
and so true. I think that it's cool to have that opportunity for the kids to all work together.
Steve, are there certain works that really stick out in your mind for you or maybe moved you in certain ways?
There are many. And I guess I'm really drawn to the ones that our youngest students have created. And I say that for the simple reason that the thing that intrigues me most and inspires me most about this project is the fact that now our community is beginning or continuing in some regards a discussion about compassion, what compassionate action looks like, and what we can do to foster that kind of activity. And when I think about who started that dialogue, it's our youngest citizens. And when I look at some of the things that our youngest kids have created, they're so simplistic, but they're absolutely pure, they're absolutely honest, they're absolutely irrefutable examples of what compassion means to those young children. So even though the drawings may be a little bit rough, even though the technique may not be as refined, I really think that when you look at this, you can't help but think, you know what, we are in really good hands here.
And Bethany, not for you to pick favorites, but are there certain stories surrounding a work that maybe a student created or certain works that do stick out for you?
There's lots of them. I think of a lot of different stories. But there's, for example, I have a student who her family through their church sponsors a family in another country. And so for her talking about this and really thinking about what this project meant to her and looking at what she created, and what she ended up creating was a piece where she had all different powerful words or empowering words that she thought represented compassion. And then she put those magazine pieces down on her canvas, but then on top of it used tracing paper to create hands holding a world so that it's, you can transparently see these words through this drawing of a world with hands. And I thought that was a really powerful image with how this this girl is a sixth grader, but how she could see that it's taking all of these ideas, these different parts of compassion, and doing your part to put your spin on how it's going to affect the world. And so, you know, having the hands holding the earth and kind of thinking about how that's going to represent it. And then having that story that went along with it, that she didn't just use a world because of the symbol of, you know, bringing everyone together. She used a world because she, her family sponsors someone from another part of the world. I thought that that was really powerful. And so, yeah, there's all different stories. And there's also some that I've seen from that weren't my students that just by going and looking at the pump house and seeing, you know, there's three-dimensional ones where kids have sculpted things coming off of their canvas and things that are really inspiring.
I remember at the opening for our art teachers and our donors, there was a couple who was coming into the project, and this wife asked her husband, "What is this one about with all these bricks?" And he goes, "Well, I have to go and check this out." So he goes and he looked it up and found the art statement. He comes back and he goes, "Do you realize that this child went with her family on a mission to another country and built a hospital?" And I'm like, "Okay, well, you would have never guessed that by looking at this panel, but the stories behind them are very deep."
You're listening to Newsmakers for Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about the La Crosse Compassion Project. My guests are Steve Michaels. He's the supervisor of fine arts for the La Crosse School District and principal of Hamilton Soda 1, and Bethany Nugent. She's an art teacher at Hamilton Soda 1 and Lincoln Soda 2. Obviously, the community has really gotten behind this. Did you feel like the students overall really got behind this project? Did they take it seriously overall?
Yeah, I feel like our students were very engaged with this. I think for a lot of reasons. One is the fact that it's art, and art is a wonderfully engaging class to begin with, and our students love it and thrive in it. I think another reason is the collaboration that occurred between guidance and our arts teachers. And that was really kind of neat to see, because collaboration is one of the buzzwords in education right now. And there are not a whole lot of opportunities, I find, for guidance teachers to be team teaching in a situation. And many of them took that opportunity and were like, "This is great. We need to find more ways to do this." So for a number of reasons, I felt like our students saw this as a very meaningful project from the beginning.
So the Compassion Project did indeed extend beyond the art room walls.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. And I think, too, I got a lot of that question right at the beginning of the project with, you know, people knowing that I was teaching some middle schoolers saying, and people kind of have the stereotype of middle schoolers that they're not very nice people. And they are. They're amazing. And they're very passionate people. And so when we started this, I got a lot of that question of, you know, do your middle schoolers really buy into this? And honestly, they did. We listened to – one of the first things we did as an activity with this project is we listened to the song We Are the World. And we talked about the 25 for Haiti and what that video was made for and what these celebrities were doing, and that it wasn't just about selling records. It was about doing something to support Haiti and to support fundraising efforts for them. And I will never forget, a few days after we had done this, I had a student come up to me and say, "Mrs. Nugent, can you please play that song again?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, of course." So I turned it on my computer, and I looked up, and all my kids were singing it. And I thought that they were playing a joke on me. I was like, "What did you guys do? Like, when did you learn this?" And they said that they had gone home, and they YouTubed it because they liked it, and they learned it. And so literally, I walked around my room, and all my kids were singing this song that was really powerful. And I got goosebumps. I mean, I still get goosebumps thinking about it, because these sixth graders that people think are, you know, a typical middle schooler that sometimes we think about drama and things that are associated with middle school, they care more than anyone about this topic, and they really bought into it. They have this really passionate personality where they, when they buy into something and they really truly care about people, they really express it in a really meaningful way. It was very impressive, and it was really fun. It was one of those moments that I'll never forget in teaching when, you know, they did that. And like I said, I thought it was all planned, but it was just something that they did on their own.
So do you think this project will have a lasting impression on the students that have participated in this?
I think so. I think this is one of those experiences, just the display itself. On our morning announcements, I talked about, you know, the need for people to go multiple times to this exhibit, bring their families, bring their neighbors, invite everyone they know, because this exhibit is probably a once-in-a-lifetime type exhibit. And I think that the students, many of our schools are going to be scheduling field trips to go to the Compassion Project at some point between now and the end of the year. And I think that when you see a massive display like that on that kind of a scale, it has, and you realize that you played a role in that, I think that's something that our students are going to remember. The challenge, of course, then is how do you, once this project is complete, not just remember it, but how do you continue this discussion? How do you move our community forward in talking about what is our next step as a community towards practicing compassion on a community-wide level? What does it mean for our business to practice compassion on our business? What does it mean for our schools to come back to our core values and practice compassion more regularly? And then what is our next core value that we're going to take a look at?
Have you had any of those discussions yet, or do you have any solutions yet?
We've talked a little bit. The La Crosse Public Education Foundation is working on a plan to canvass the community in compassion, where when our projects come down, if students elect to, their canvas could be selected to go to a local business. We've had many businesses come forward asking us for canvases when the project comes down. And, of course, we want to give our students their first chance at having theirs back. But that's one thing we've talked about. But we've also talked about things, you know, within our own buildings that we can do, and keeping that part of our vocabulary. I think that that's a big part of it, is if we keep it a part of our vocabulary when we're teaching, our kids will make it a part of theirs as well, and we'll continue it. It's something that's really positive, and it's such a better way to tell kids to be nice than to say, stop doing that, or don't do that, or any of those negative kind of connotations. In teaching, one of the first things you learn is never say don't think about a pink elephant, because that's the first thing people are going to do. And too often we are, you know, don't talk right now, or sit down, or be quiet. And this is a way to say, be compassionate. Think about what that other person is feeling. You know, if you're sitting in a classroom and the person next to you is talking and you can't hear anything, are they going to feel really happy, or are they going to be kind of sad? And so it's a really good way to bring those topics up and to make kids really think about the emotion and the feeling that goes into your actions, rather than just doing what you feel like.
I was wondering how much of an effect this would have in tackling bullying in schools and really addressing racism, sexism, ageism. I mean, is that part of the conversation surrounding the Compassion Project, or is that just something that students just figure out on their own?
Yeah, from the get-go, as we were planning this project, the word got out to some of our supporters. Some of our supporters in mental health who work with us and coach our schools in bully prevention and directing students to receive some mental health care, and sometimes families. One of those leaders said to me, you know, what is the antidote to bullying? What is it? And really, it's compassion. And you think about what is the antidote? It's thinking about, how did that other person feel? Walk a mile in their shoes. Would you like to feel this way? How do we make them feel better? How do we bring them up? So all those things it made perfect sense as far as that correlation between bullying prevention and the teaching of compassion.
Will it continue on within the school district, maybe in a less public light next year, or are you still working that out?
It will most definitely continue. I think the next step is truly in our community. And I think that the schools, we have a model that's worked for us for getting this topic of compassion discussed in classrooms, in our guidance curriculum, integrated into other areas. And so I think that's, the schools are on board with that. I think the next step is for our communities to say, okay, now, I think that there's been enough attention drawn to this that more people are starting to go, well, tell me more about this. So I think now is the time to really start pushing some of the retreat ideas. We piloted a couple of those this year for community members and businesses to come forward and say, this is what compassion is. This is how we taught it to our students. Here's a panel for you to do.
And it's amazing in more ways than just that a lot of adults haven't created art in years. I mean, a lot of people give it up right after middle school, or they don't feel like they're good at it, and so they stop doing it. And I think when we've had these retreats, that's one of the things that has been the biggest takeaway for me, is how many people came into that retreat saying, I don't do art, I can't do art, and then went out with a beautiful 6-inch by 6-inch canvas that proved them wrong. But people just don't make time for it necessarily. And I think it's something that we forget how expressive it is and how much you can communicate through it, and how really relaxing and reflective it can be to just just sit down and take that time to really focus on doing your art. Art is something that's really helpful for people in that. And I think that when you take that time as a community and as an adult to sit down and create something, that it really helps you get back in touch with that reflecting and that important personal side of this project.
Bethany Nugent is an art teacher at Hamilton Soda 1 and Lincoln Soda 2, and Steve Michaels is the supervisor of fine arts for the La Crosse School District and principal of Hamilton Soda 1. Today, we were talking about the La Crosse Compassion Project. 6,000 La Crosse School District students created their own work of art on a 6x6-inch canvas. Students of all ages, from kindergartners through seniors in high school, thought about what compassion means to them. I recently talked with some students about their artwork for the Compassion Project. We'll start with students at Lincoln Middle School.
I had like my canvas, and then I did an extra layer with my wax paper. And on the wax paper, I did a half a person that said words around it that said, think of things in a different perspective and like how you can help people. And like, and on the canvas, it had different examples of what you can do. You can like help the environment, and you can, if someone was having trouble in school, you could help them.
I'm Sejal Vasek, and I go to Lincoln Middle School, and I'm in sixth grade. Empathy can like be like you can look at someone and say, well, I feel bad for them, and just think about it. But compassion is kind of going over there and telling them, do you need help, and helping them without like expecting anything back or anything like that. So I thought, like, well, I could draw things that were examples to help people think, well, I could do this the next day, or I could do this to someone else to help them, remind them that you should be compassionate.
On my canvas, I put like flags of different countries around the world, and then I put wax paper over that, which had like a change in different seasons with the letters compassion going through all of them. I'm Noah Swerman, and I'm in sixth grade, and I go to Lincoln Middle School. I think compassion was probably a good thing to choose because, like, when we were kind of learning about it, empathy is like thinking about it, but compassion is actually doing it. So I think compassion was probably a good choice.
If someone was lonely at lunch, then like we could like invite them over. And so I've done that like a couple times and suggested that to my friends to bring up that we should be compassionate all the time. Well, sometimes they were kind of iffy if they wanted them to come over or not, but it's something new to try, you know, like it'll make you feel better.
Did it work out in the end?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, they came over and they were really happy and it put a smile on their face.
I think some of the kids that kind of goof off and stuff, they don't really take it seriously, but other kids I think definitely do.
Well, there are those kids, you know, that like goof around and stuff, but everyone was like really serious about it. Like they understood what the teachers were saying, and they understood that she wanted them to be more compassionate and to everyone else, and to bring it out to everyone that you should always be compassionate. So
I thought when we started talking about compassion, it was kind of surprising because all year we hadn't really talked about it. My name is Isabel DeWester, and I go to Hamilton School.
I think about the word compassion is like helping people about if, like, they're hurt or they need help.
My name is Denisha Randolph, and I'm in third grade, and I go to Hamilton School.
I drew, like, the night sky with the earth, and I drew it with stars around it, like, half day, half night, and then a big earth in the middle, shaped like a heart. In our class, we were talking about compassion and earth, and I thought that'd be a fun thing to draw for it.
I put, like, people helping people up, and other people caring for people, and people building, like, a home for free so people can live in it that don't drive homes.
I drew the sidewalk. My baby, we were going for a walk and he fell, and I was helping.
Asha Champion, kindergarten, Hamilton. Made me feel like I'm a person in the community that helps people. I like to help my mom. Sometimes I sort the laundry with her. And sometimes when she has to get ready for work and my dad is getting the car, I have to take care of my baby brother and I help my family out.
I do feel like a lot of people are thinking about more compassion, and I think me and my friends do talk about it a lot.
It's like when we did it, it's a whole new world to me. It just changed me up. I don't know. It was like it fixed me up. It fixed me up. It taught me into helping people and being so great. I couldn't believe how good I was being.
Compassion helped me a lot. It's because I was people were getting pushed down and hurt every day, and I didn't know what to do. Go tell a teacher, and then they were saying, stop being a tattletale. So I just left it to my mind to make sure people weren't being hurt and tell the bully to stop bullying people.
Since we talked about compassion, there wasn't bullying in our school anymore, because I know older kids used to bully other kids, and now there's not that anymore because we've talked about it and other kids have seen what they have done and they feel bad now.
It's very safe at our school now because people aren't bullying and pushing people, and it's also safe because people aren't being tattletales, and people are standing up for other people telling the bully to stop bullying.
It feels like it's finally safe. Yeah, it feels like it's safe to play and not get hurt anymore.
La Crosse School District students talking about the Compassion Project. The 6,000 works of art are on display at the Pump House until June 28th. You're listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, we'll talk about planning for a financially secure retirement. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. There, you'll also find a link to the Compassion Project and examples of student artwork. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. According to a Pew Research study, more Americans are worried about their finances in retirement than they were a few years ago, as the Great Recession was coming to an end. And it's not just baby boomers that are concerned they're not saving enough, but 40% of adults say they're not confident they'll have enough money to get through retirement. Recognizing this growing concern, AARP Wisconsin and AARP Minnesota are trying to help people better plan for retirement. Here today to talk about retirement and an upcoming presentation on financial security is Lisa Lampkins. She's a Federal Issues Advocacy Director for AARP Wisconsin, and Seth Buffelli. He's a Communications Director for AARP Minnesota. I'm wondering if, Lisa, maybe you can first talk about when you're talking with people across Wisconsin, I mean, do they actually seem more concerned about planning for retirement than they had been in the past?
You know, we definitely are hearing that, Maureen. People are worried. And even if they've been saving and are getting close to retirement, folks are very concerned that they are not going to have enough, particularly to live independently throughout their retirement. In fact, we know that about 7 in 10 Americans think it's harder to retire now than it was for previous generations. So, you know, AARP is really trying to do our part to make sure that people understand, you know, what's going on, what they need to do, some steps they can take, some policies and some opportunities that can happen legislatively, and to make sure that people can save enough to remain happy and healthy and all that good stuff in retirement.
And why is it that people are more concerned? I mean, 7 in 10, 70% of people that we live with.
That's a lot. Well, you know, we've really gone through some rough economic times recently, and that has people worried, and they're feeling the effects of it. So many people have gone to, workplace, basically, retirement plans that are 401ks. The value of those 401ks have gone down. People saw their savings plummet. Housing values have gone down. So all of those things that people have traditionally relied upon for retirement are hurting, and people are really feeling the impact of that.
And Seth, what about the fact that, you know, people are also living longer and maybe expecting more and wanting to do more within their retirement years?
I think that's true. You know, longevity is a big thing about it, especially when it comes into healthcare costs. You know, I don't think the average person factors in how much of their retirement income is going to go towards healthcare. And obviously, the longer you live, the longer that those expenses mount up. Just to piggyback on something Lisa said, you know, when you think about, you know, our parents' generation, our grandparents' generation, you know, when they went into retirement, they really went in with three strong legs. Most of them had pensions. About 6 in 10 had a pension. They had their own private investments, and they had Social Security. So you really had three streams of income. And, you know, over the years, pensions have all but gone away. I think only about 1 in 10 workers, at least in Minnesota, has access to a pension. That's been replaced with 401ks. A lot of those lost value the last 5 or 10 years. And even those are starting to go away. We look in Minnesota, about 4 in 10 workers, about a million people in the state of Minnesota, don't even have access to a retirement plan that they can invest their own money into. Forget about, you know, a defined benefit. To forget about even an employer contribution. There's about a million people that don't even have a plan that they can put their own money, whatever they have, to invest into.
Is it the same situation in Wisconsin, Lisa?
It is very close. We have about 1.5 million people in Wisconsin that don't have any access to sort of a workplace savings kind of program. And we do know that, you know, people want to save and find it much easier to save when they have access to it through the workplace. If you're like me, I've got that extra $20 in my purse and it's burning a hole in my pocket and I, you know, want to spend it on a cup of coffee. But if it goes automatically from my paycheck into, you know, some kind of retirement savings plan, then you really don't miss it as much. And, you know, studies have shown over and over again that people are more likely to save if they have access to it in the workplace.
Are there major barriers, besides obviously financial, that really prevent employers from offering their employees pensions?
I think so, especially for smaller employees or smaller employers. You know, a small business goes out there and they could look at a lot of different plans. At the end of the day, a lot of them are more expensive than is worth it. And even the ones that are affordable, the return on the investment might not be worth it. So this is really a bind, I think, not just for employees, but employers too, because, you know, a lot of small business owners, even though they might only have 5 employees, they want to do what's right for them. They want to help them. You know, they want to keep them. And especially as an employee gets older, you know, they're looking for those retirement savings vehicles are almost as important as, you know, what their monthly paycheck is.
You know, we've been hearing a lot about, obviously, baby boomers are retiring. They're approaching retirement. There's all sorts of research coming out now how that's going to affect the job market. But how will that be affecting maybe pension plans or just in people like you and helping people plan for retirement?
Well, we're certainly seeing an increased demand for more information around how can I plan for retirement. You know, it's something that everybody, thinks about, but very, very few of us have actually taken that extra step of using retirement planning calculators or figuring out when is the best time to take my Social Security benefits. You know, how much money will I need when it comes to healthcare? Seth had mentioned healthcare costs. That's a huge component. In fact, for many retirees, it's nearly 20% of their income gets spent on healthcare costs. That often does not get factored into sort of what do I need to live on when it comes to retirement. So we're really seeing an increase in the need for kind of education and helping people plan and figure out what they need when it comes to retiring.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about planning for retirement. I'm joined by 2 representatives, one from AARP Wisconsin, one from AARP Minnesota. Lisa Lampkins is the Federal Issues Advocacy Director for AARP Wisconsin, and Seth Buffelli is the Communications Director for AARP Minnesota. I talked about at the beginning about how there's almost been this shift in concerns for retirement. This Pew Research Center study found that before the Great Recession, baby boomers, people aged about 55 to 60, said they were very concerned about retirement. After the Great Recession, I think it said 53% of adults ages 63 to 40 were the most concerned about retirement. Why has there been this shift, and what exactly does that mean?
I mean, I think it's good news. The younger that somebody starts to think about it, the better it is. There might be some bad news inside of that, in that I think if you ask those 30 and 40-year-olds whether or not they thought Social Security was there for them, a lot of them would say no. Now, that's another myth that we're trying to dispel, because Social Security is very strong, and there are kind of common sense solutions to extending the life of the trust fund another 50, 75 years that will make it, you know, people in their 30s and 40s can absolutely rely on it. So I think maybe some of that concern comes from younger folks who are saying, I have to have my own plan because I don't necessarily trust that sort of the government safety net is going to be there for me. But I think the last 10 years have been a wake-up call for everybody. They've been a wake-up call for people who were on the cusp of retiring and maybe still be in the back in the workforce trying to recoup those losses in their 401ks. But, you know, life gets busy in your 30s and 40s, and you have kids, and you worry about promotions, and you worry about, you know, health care and paying for college. And we see this a lot with kind of our new members. They turn 50. They kind of see the horizon. They look forward to being able to do something other than just, you know, punch a clock. And when they look at where they are savings-wise, they realize pretty quickly that it's going to take – that retirement's a lot more expensive than they had thought it was going to be.
So beyond, you know, maybe people thinking about retirement early, are workers doing things much differently or making maybe drastic changes in order to plan for retirement, Lisa?
You know, we haven't really seen that. In fact, we have a pretty big savings gap right now in terms of what people would need to live comfortably in retirement and what they have actually saved. And I think that's why we've seen some renewed focus around Social Security. We've always, Seth talked a little bit about the three legs of the retirement stool. Social Security really is one of the strongest. And as people are having less savings, they're relying on Social Security more and more. In fact, 30% of Wisconsin seniors rely on Social Security for all of their retirement income. And we're not talking about a lot of cash here. The average benefit in Wisconsin is about $15,300 a year. So that's not a lot to live on if that's the only income that you have coming in. So we're seeing people really recognize the need to protect Social Security because they know they're going to need it. And that's where a little bit of that sort of what Seth was talking about, what's crazy is some of the younger folks will say things like, oh, well, it's not going to be there for me. And then when you tell them, oh, did you realize that the Social Security age at which you know can take your full benefits has gone up, a lot of times people will say, well, what? You mean I have to wait a couple more years to get those benefits? So it's so ingrained in terms of a family income protection program that we really do have to make sure it's there, not only for the people who are getting those benefits now, but, you know, for people down the road, for those future generations who will rely on it.
And I guess regardless of, you know, what the Social Security program will look like in 50 years, it can never hurt to actually have another retirement plan, which I guess is kind of what this all boils down
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. I mean, Social Security really provides that base, that sort of guaranteed floor of income that everybody needs, but it's not enough. And it was never designed to be enough. So it's very important to have some of those other components. And, you know, that's why we're trying to get out and talk to people a little bit about some things that could happen legislatively to help people save. Both Wisconsin and Minnesota state legislatures are looking at ways to design some programs to help people save in the workplace, because we know Social Security is not enough and people need to have some other options as well to augment that.
And Seth, Minnesota's had more luck in this legislation. I'm wondering if you could talk about the Minnesota Secure Choice Act.
We are very hopeful to have something passed into law in the next hopefully days, maybe a couple of weeks here. But when we looked at it, and it's not just AARP, we're in a coalition of a number of groups, but the goal is to increase savings, and really to do that, you have to increase access. We looked at studies that showed that for every 10 people who have access to a workplace savings plan, seven out of 10 take advantage of it. And so that we felt that was the most effective place to address it. We also knew we had about 1 million people who didn't even have one of those plans. So what this, the Minnesota Secure Choice Act is it creates a study. And the study is going to look at, one, kind of further defining this retirement savings gap that sort of anecdotally we know exists in Minnesota, but we need kind of some more facts to round that picture out. And then it also look in the into the feasibility of really standing up the state to stand up a private savings plan. And so the way this would work wouldn't be a state-run pension program. It would work a lot like the 529 college savings plan, where the state kind of invests the money to kind of stand this up, but it's managed privately. People who don't have access at work can invest their own money voluntarily. You get to choose whether or not to take place in it. And you could take, like Lisa said, you can take that $20 right out of your paycheck and put it right into your account. You don't have to kind of go find a financial advisor and invest in it. The other kind of great piece of it, too, is for those small business owners we talked about who maybe want to do something but just can't find an affordable plan, they could even contribute into something like this, too. So It's passed through both the State House and the State Senate. It's in a conference committee right now, kind of just fine-tuning the study, how much it's going to cost, what the parameters are going to be. And we're hopeful that next year in 2015 we'll be able to go to the legislature, try to get it enacted, because this is something that we feel very strongly based on the fact that when these plans are available, people take advantage of them, that this will be something to start to move that dial back in the other direction.
And Lisa, here in Wisconsin, a similar piece of legislation actually failed within the legislature this year.
Right. There was the Wisconsin Private Secure Retirement Act that was introduced, but nothing happened this session. But we are very confident it's going to come back next session. And ours is similar in the sense that it's to encourage people who don't have any access to a workplace savings vehicle. What the Wisconsin version would do, though, is basically set up a parallel system to the Wisconsin retirement system. So that's our, the state sort of pension plan. There would be a parallel system for people in private businesses who could, again, voluntarily contribute money. It's a feasibility study to, again, look at, what could happen, how would this work. It could be invested. The money would be invested by the State of Wisconsin Investment Board, really sort of two parallel tracks for workers in private businesses who are looking for that savings plan.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're talking about planning for retirement. My guests are Seth Buffelli. He's the communications director for AARP Minnesota, and Lisa Lampkins. She's a federal issues advocacy director for AARP Wisconsin. At this point in time, how much do people need to plan for retirement?
Well, that really is, it's an individual question. I think it depends what you see yourself doing in retirement. And one of the first things that I know we have encouraged people to do is take a look at, what do you want your retirement to be? Do you envision it traveling around the country or traveling around the world? Do you envision, spending time at home? Do you envision doing some kind of work? You really need to sort of think about what is your vision, what are your dreams for retirement, and then figure out how much it would cost to fund that. And there are many, many different kinds of calculators that can help you figure out those things. AARP has a whole slew of – there's a retirement planning calculator. There's a Social Security benefits calculator. There's even a healthcare cost calculator. Hey, what's it going to cost me, if I do need some kind of healthcare? So all of those calculators are available on the, go to AARP.org website and you can find those calculators. But it really is important. I think the first step is to actually figure out, well, what do I want it to be? And then you can help figure out, how much is it going to cost?
And I think, as both of you mentioned before, often people don't plan for medical costs for the future. And I think you're trying to stress the importance of saving for, unplanned medical emergencies and whatnot.
Well, absolutely. And I know when we talk to a lot of younger people, they think, you turn 65, you go on to Medicare. Great, your health care is all covered, right? Cool, you finally have Medicare. Well, that is not true. I mean, Medicare, as anybody who actually is a Medicare beneficiary knows, you still have monthly premiums. There are deductibles. There are many costs still associated with even just having health care coverage. And then, again, if some major illness happens, healthcare costs are a very important part of what many older people and, frankly, people of all ages spend their money on these days.
So AARP Wisconsin, AARP Minnesota, together you're hosting a financial security summit May 12th, next Monday, here in La Crosse, and it's a free event basically to help people think more about planning for retirement. I'm wondering, Lisa, if you can explain what people who want to attend or may be interested in attending.
Sure. Well, and we'd love to invite people to come and join us. Both Seth and I will be there. We're going to talk about a variety of things. We'll cover some Social Security, especially taking a look at some of the options to keep that program strong for the future. And then we're going to talk about both of the legislative options in both Wisconsin and Minnesota. How can we improve workplace savings? We'll have a chance for our participants to talk too. We're going to do some cool feedback, some instant polling things where we're asking people questions and they'll get a chance to see what the audience thinks immediately. We're going to talk about just some different financial planning questions and have tables and participants come up with some great ideas. And then we're going to try something a little fun with desserts and discussions. And people can go to different tables and check out, like we'll have a table on cupcakes and caregiving or fruit and fraud watch or a whole variety of topics where people can come learn more about some financial security issues.
Lisa Lampkins is a Federal Issues Advocacy Director for AARP Wisconsin. And Seth Buffelli is Communications Director for AARP Minnesota. Today, we are talking about planning for retirement. Again, the Financial Security Summit is May 12th at 10 a.m. at the Radisson in La Crosse. You can find a link to register for the summit at our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Stroob, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other recent editions of this show, and if you'd like to share your comments or make a suggestion for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.